Hello, Peter. It's a great pleasure to have you on the podcast. How are you?
Hello. Nice to thank you for having me. A great pleasure to talk to you. I'm good, thank you. I'm in Norway, and it's full on winter here. Mm-hmm. Enjoying some skiing and it's still very, very dark up here. We haven't seen the sun here in the valley for like 2 months or something, and we still have another month to go. Yeah, you know, the valley is so steep, so yeah. the sun doesn't touch our house for 3 months, I think.
Oh my god.
So we have to ski up to be able to see the sun.
That's why you're skiing.
Yes. Exactly. Yes.
Thank you for being here. So first of all, I want to thank a friend of both of us, Hugo Deck, who put us in relation. So huge thank you, huge shout out to Hugo. Can you tell me the importance of the place of Hugo in your life?
Yeah, Hugo Deck, he's a funny guy. Mm-hmm. Lots of energy, the funniest laugh.
Yeah.
In the
unbelievable
world. He like fills the whole room with joy and happiness wherever he walks. Great charisma. So yeah, he joined the team last summer. Mm-hmm. In 2022. Met him first time in Chamonix. Mm-hmm. And we went for some really nice hikes together, and so impressed with like his journey to trail running and how he went from being a smoking basketball player to becoming one of the best ultra runners in the world, and a huge talent. And now he's a great guy, and so happy to have him in the team, and proud to have him as a teammate. So hopefully we both can do the full loop around Mont Blanc one time.
Great, thank you again, Hugo, to put us in relation. I love really definitively Hugo. Is the best. He's the best.
Yeah, great guy.
He say to me that it is important for you to not calling you Peter but Peter. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, my name is Peter, not Peter.
Peter. Yeah.
So right. I guess maybe it's a French thing to. Maybe there's not so many Peters in France, and maybe Peter is more common. I know, but that's been a struggle since I started to compete in France, I guess. And since I was a Salomon athlete before, also everyone in Salomon called me Peter, and all the races. So I have to step by step try to correct every announcer and French. Friends there, but so it's Peter, not Peter.
I promise to you that in the whole episode I'm gonna call you Peter and not Peter. That right?
Oh, okay. That sounds good.
Peter, for starting, can you introduce yourself in a few words, please? Who is Peter Engdahl?
Well, my name is Peter Engdahl. I'm Swedish, but I live in Norway. Mm-hmm. And I'm a industrial design student at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, and I am also a professional trail runner for Adidas Terex. Mm-hmm. And I live in Romsdalen on the west coast of Norway, where I train in the mountains on skis and running. I love to take photos and to design stuff, and also to play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And
me too. Common point.
And, I guess that's me. I have a girlfriend who lives here in Romsdalen as well, and she's a trail runner. My family still lives in Sweden, but my brother lives in Trondheim. And I spend most of my summers in Chamonix since 3 years ago to run in the mountains there. So have a great relationship with the Chamonix and with the Alps in France. Mm-hmm. So
it's a great place to live. You know?
Yeah, for sure. Like the combination of Romsdalen and Chamonix is great.
Thank you for the presentation, Peter. In my podcast, I want that my guests talk about their childhood. Where do you grow up, and in what kind of environment?
I grew up in outside of the town of Falun in Sweden. Mm-hmm. My parents were both orienteers and Nordic skiers.
Yeah.
So like sport has been like a big part of my childhood. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I tried orienteering, I'm very colorblind, so that wasn't a very good sport for me. Yeah, I'm really
like
colorblind.
Like a Daltonian, so. Daltonian, like we say in France, Daltonian.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm very bad with the colors, mm-hmm. Even though I'm a designer, mm-hmm. I'm not very good with picking colors. Mm-hmm. But anyway, orienteering didn't become a thing, but I pretty much did any other sport you can think of. Everything from ping pong to basketball to track and field, ice hockey, running, skiing, and everything. But it was always Nordic skiing that I wanted to do, and that mm-hmm. was my big passion. So yeah, me and my family, I have two brothers, younger brothers. We spent a lot of time on skis in the mountains, and that's where we spent our weekends and on holidays, mm-hmm. and stuff like this. So sport and has been a big part of my childhood for sure.
Great. A lot of sports. On your website, you say that you were not born to become a cross-country skier. What do you mean by that?
I think I've never been a big like talent at mm-hmm. anything. Like it's through a lot of hard work, and mm-hmm. I was very far behind in the results when I was growing up because of several reasons, I guess. But I was a really, really small kid, and mm-hmm. still not that big. I'm like 169 or something like this, and very tiny as growing up, so very far behind. But loved to train and loved to work hard, and I guess that was my talent in the end. Mm-hmm. But also I think my sentence there was like I was never grown up to be a runner as well. I love to run, but Nordic skiing and was my passion there, and I saw always myself as a skier before a runner. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But then it all changed, I guess.
Okay. And when do you realize that it will be possible for you to make this sport at such a high level?
Maybe when I was 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. I even though I was quite small, I had some like really good progression during this age, where I went from like being very far behind in the results to suddenly being amongst the best in the country, mm-hmm. on the skis. And that was only because I was like really, really focused and trained really hard, and had such great support from my parents, mm-hmm. who drove me everywhere to practice and to ski and stuff like this. And also with the ski team I had, like it gave me a lot of confidence and good environment to get better. So when I was 13 or 14, I saw like a big progression, and then I felt like, okay, I want to see how good I can get. Mm-hmm. So when I was 16, I moved from home to Åre, to like one of the big ski resort villages in Sweden, mm-hmm. where I started the ski high school. And then it was like mostly focused on skiing, or only focusing on skiing. And there all the time, like I had great progression in my career, and I saw like that endurance sport was something that I wanted to pursue. Mm-hmm. And then throughout the years, like opportunities have changed all the time. But I think from that year when I was 13, my confidence had never really faded. Like I really knew what I wanted to do and what I wanted to pursue, and that was like to become a really good endurance athlete. First it was skiing, and then later years when I discovered trail running and discovered the sport and realized how much that gave to me and how much joy I found it, it slowly transitioned from Nordic skiing to trail running.
Yeah, yeah, we're gonna talk about that just after. But with you say ski, is it Nordic skiing, cross country skiing? Can you please?
Yeah, ski de fond.
Ski de fond. Mm-hmm. And so, can you tell us some milestones that you remember about your career in Nordic skiing?
Yes. My biggest milestone, I guess, was my first World Cup in Holmenkollen, Oslo.
2018, yeah.
Yes, exactly. where I got to represent Sweden in the World Cup for the first time. And that like is my biggest milestone, I guess, to put on that national team suit was a huge deal for me. And after that, and that was a really good race for me also to be a 23rd position, I think. And after that, I got into the national team for the upcoming year and did some more World Cups, won a few in Falun and in Ulricehamn, and had fourth place in the national championship. And I also represented the team Santander, it was called at the time, and now Team Ragde Charge is one of the professional ski classics team from Norway. And representing them was also like a big milestone for me, because I could train with some of the best athletes in the world in skiing. And that was before I joined the national team. And so that was like definitely like some big highlights, highlight year for me, 2018, 2019.
Okay.
And then, of course, the pandemic came and it was a little bit tough. And I had some other injuries and health issues. But other highlights, I guess, there was like I moved to Trondheim to in Norway, where I got to train a lot with Didrik Tønseth, Niklas Dyrhaug, and Andre Musgrave, where I also felt like I had good progression, but and some really good results during the winter. But I think I realized that running was by then the thing that I was most passionate about. But for sure, like I feel that I'm happy with my ski career. I got to experience a lot of things and have some results I'm really, really proud of. And I'm not ruling out trying Nordic skiing again. I'm doing Engadin Ski Marathon in Mars in the St. Moritz. So that will be really fun to see if I have how much I have lost, how much my triceps have decreased during this period of only running.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah. Because yeah. I saw on the FIS website that you have apparently no results since April 2022. So you didn't compete since then?
No, I haven't raced since. So last winter was my first winter since I was like 6 years old, where I haven't raced in Nordic skiing, and it was quite weird, actually, but also quite nice in a good way. I didn't really miss it for some reason, and at the moment I actually don't follow Nordic skiing that much, like the World Cup or the races. I follow a little bit because I have a lot of friends in the sport and that I want to succeed, of course, and I'm always rooting for them. But no, my own days are occupied with training and school and other stuff, so I haven't followed much. But I still love to ski, and I love to Nordic ski, and I do it still a lot as training, so it's still a part of my life.
And I wanna understand what is the place of Nordic skiing in Sweden? Is it an institution like sport, a huge sport? How many people practice this sport? And can you tell us about that?
So in Sweden, it is actually not that big as you would think it is. Because in the big cities like Stockholm and Göteborg, there is not that much snow. They're more skiing in like the more northern cities, like Östersund and Umeå and Falun, where there's a few skiers that that practice it. And then we, of course, have the Vasaloppet in the second week of March. That is the world's biggest ski race. So that that is like a thing that you have to do in Sweden. Like one day in your life, you have to do a Vasaloppet at some point. So it's like a thing that you have to do. So, but like skiing as a sport is not that big compared to here in Norway, where I am now. It is crazy. Like when you come here, you go to Oslo and you go to the city of like 1 million people, and you see people on the subways like walking around with skis in the center, like going out to ski. That's what they do.
It's like everywhere.
They're skiing everywhere, and that's like a part of their culture and growing up. And so in my class, like, it doesn't matter if you're from north of Norway, if you're from the center of Oslo, or from in the middle of nowhere, everybody has grown up to ski at one point and have some relation with skis. And also, like, as a, at a competitive level, there is much more common to, like, practice Nordic skiing as a sport. Like, I remember there's, like, one club in Oslo, like one of like 10 ski clubs, but they have, I think it's 1300 kids between the age of 8 and 13 in their ski club.
Ooh.
So it's like, it's not that strange that they are like dominating the sport. It's it's just insane. And when you go out in the like forest or in the skiing, or you see all the smaller kids in kindergarten go out and skis. And so here is like a religion. And a really big thing.
Yeah. To come back to your Oslo Competition World Cup in 2018, what was like to have the jersey of your country on your shoulders?
That was a great.
It was the first time.
Yeah, it was the first time I put the Swedish race suit on and got to represent my country. And to do it also in Oslo and the 50K in Holmenkollen was huge for me, because it was the race that was like highest up on my list, because it's like it's the most prestigious World Cup in the of the whole year. It is where it's the most people watching. It has a history, and and that for me also, I am better at the longer distances. So it was a distance I felt I had a good chance of doing a good race in. So now to race in Holmenkollen in Oslo in front of 100,000 people that was around the course, it was just insane. Like, I still get goosebumps when talking about it. It was, and after the race, my race suit smelt of beer and barbecue, because they're like firing like barbecues and like just spraying beer all over the place. And there's a big party around the course, and really, really cool atmosphere. And of course, it helped that I did one of my best races in my career, of course. And it was really huge.
To talk about the transition with from skiing to trail running, you say also on your website, which is great, by the way, great website. You say, I have never really considered myself as a runner. I was running during the summer as training for the winter. It all started like this, Peter?
Yeah, like I said, like I was doing some running, like cross country, some track and field when I was growing up, but it was always like just for training for the winter season.
Mm-hmm.
And as a Nordic skier, like for me at least, I felt like running was a very effective type of training compared to roller skiing. I was, of course, doing a lot of roller skiing, but mm-hmm. not as much compared to others in the national team or others. I was more, my coach was more, who is a little bit old school. Mm-hmm. And like, he's like one of those old school coaches who encouraged me to run, to build the endurance and to build the good engine to be a good uphill skier, and to because the motion of running and classical skiing is quite similar, but mm-hmm. Narrow muscular, and the effect of training is really great in running compared to roller skiing. Yeah. So that was a big part of my training for the winter. Mm-hmm. And then, so then when I try some trail races, maybe obviously I was running quite fast because I was doing it a lot, but it was never of the purpose of becoming a good runner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean when like I was, I never really considered myself as a runner. It was a great way to train.
Part of the
training. Yeah, it was a part of the training.
Big part.
Yeah, really, really big part. So I would say during a year, 60% of my training was running and the rest was skiing.
Yeah.
And in various, like during summer, it was a little bit more, and during the winter, more skiing, of course. So it ended up like around there, 60-40, 65, 55-45, depending on the year. So, and then I also had, when I became a senior skier, like when you're 19 or 20 years old, you go from junior becoming junior to from junior becoming senior. I had like came to a crossroad where like, okay, how do I how should I do now to like become, to get even better at the, for example, the longer distances. And I started to look at training of a lot of great endurance athletes in other sport and see how they were doing. And I came across this guy called Kilian Jonne.
No, I don't know. I don't know who it is.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw he was pretty good at running uphill.
Yeah.
So I was like, maybe I should look into this and see what this is. So at the time, I was living in Åre, which is like the some of the highest mountains in Sweden. It's not great, but it was really nice for mountain running, and I always loved to run in the mountains and in the nature. So I started to do that more to like become a better uphill mm-hmm. athlete and to become greater in the longer distances. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, I'm like a pretty small guy. Like I said, I'm like 169. So I realized that I would never beat Petter Northug in a sprint finish,
mm-hmm.
Or like be one of the more explosive skiers. So like, okay, I need to be able to win the race in some other way. Mm-hmm. And then I started to look, okay, maybe I can become like the best uphill skier in the world. So I started to study other trail runners and this sport, and started to run a lot more in the mountains myself. And it was really interesting that when I started run more in the mountains, my performance in skiing just increased, and I got better and better. So that was really interesting. And from that year, I really like it became a bigger part of my training, and it became my strength as a skier.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw that you started to compete in trail running in like a sky running style. Mostly the first international competition was in 2018 in Italy, I think so.
2017, I think.
17, okay.
Or 2000, or even 2016. I raced my first race in Limone Solgada. It was my first World Cup.
So you started to compete on high level competitions. So why do you want so early to confront you to the best athletes in the world?
Yeah, I don't know. First of all, I did some races at
Yeah.
home in Sweden, of course, some more local, and
Okay.
realized that the training was working really well there, and I was winning a lot of races home in Sweden. And of course, I got curious to see like how it is in an international level. So I went to Limone to see
What is your level?
Yeah, exactly. And it was good, not really, really good, but I think I was 15th at the Sky Race and 6th, I think, at the vertical. So it was good, but not like really, really high. So, but that gave me a lot of motivation for sure to like come back and do it better. And the year after, I was number 5 at the Limone Sky Race, and I think 4th at the vertical. So I had a great improvement just after that first race, and then went to Zermatt, the race in Zermatt,
Zermatt, yeah. Marathon de Zermatt,
yes,
yeah.
exactly, the Sky Race there, and the year following was the 2018 season, which was like I guess my big one of my bigger years in skyrunning. So I guess like why I wanted to do competitive racing was a little bit like to see if not I was not only good in Nordic skiing, but the training I was doing, if it gave me also some high
Skills.
level skills in trail running. And then it was also like from those first races, I realized that I really love the sport, of course, and the community and the atmosphere, and just go out and run in the mountains in free speed and just enjoy running on the trails and stuff like this. So it was not only the competitive side, but it was also all
Community.
the other things. Yeah, the community and the feeling of running on the trails and stuff like this was completely new and freeing for me in a way. So I not only became big fan of like the training, but also like the whole package. And I think it came pretty clear to me like in 2018 and 2019 that this was a sport I wanted to do long term and to pursue in the future.
You answered by advance to my next question, which was what is different in trail running compared to Nordic skiing? I know it's a difficult question, but if you have one thing to select, what is difference between these two sports?
For me, it is the feeling of freedom in a way. Like you are,
Really? Okay.
it's Nordic skiing is like, of course, the environment, the community and the sport itself, the races or the race rules and all of this is completely different than how the races look like. But in general, like the movement and the sport, like with Nordic skiing, you need a pair of skis, you need a pair of poles, you need to be good at waxing. And when you go out, you can only go on this path that the ski groomer has done for you, and this only 5K loop. And you can't really move outside of it because the skis are so terrible of go doing anything else. But then you have this completely simple and beautiful sport where you just need a pair of running shoes and just go out and run where you want, pretty much. And you can go high up in the mountains. You can't really do that with Nordic skiing. You can go on the roads. You can go on gravel roads. There's almost no limits where you can go. So it was this like, I feel this freedom in my life when I can run because I can do it everywhere, and that was like my first why I love it so much, I think.
And how do you deal with the fact that at some point you have to select, you have to switch sport? Was it your feeling at that time?
Yes, a little bit, but it actually came like pretty natural after in the 2022 season, when I didn't manage to qualify for the Olympics, and when I also had some other issues during the winter and stuff like this. I had some problems with my feet that they always they get really, really cold for some reason, like I lose all sensitivity. But there was several other reasons okay, this racing, Nordic skiing, is not that fun anymore. And also the sport itself is changing to in a direction that I didn't like either. The distances is becoming shorter, the courses are flatter, and I don't know. And I've done like so many Nordic races in my career and seen the sport, been in the national team and all of this. So I felt like,
You made the loop.
yes, the loop, and exactly. I've been in that community and so on. And then when I had it, and I just signed with the Terex team the year before, and I could suddenly live out of the sport and have it as a profession. And then sort of Nordic skiing became my hobby on the side, because like suddenly I was paid to be a trail runner, and that made it the choice even simpler. Like I didn't even have to think about it that much. It just become, no, this is now is the time. Now this is what I want to do. And I didn't feel sad about it. I wasn't frustrated that I had like pushed myself further or tried another year or anything like this. I felt like me and the competitive side of Nordic skiing had come to an end, and that this new life as a professional trail runner and doing everything in my training to become as good as I can in this was suddenly my big ambition and priority. So, and that I was really grateful for, and came into a position where I could do this, where I could do my hobby as a job, and that was just fantastic.
The stars align.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. Yeah, great. I want to think talk about a great subject here in France. We see today some of the best trail runners making some huge training in backcountry skiing. Do you think that it's a tool or a great weapon for trail running to have an history in skiing, you know, cross country or backcountry skiing?
Should be, definitely. Think there's also like it's two sports that is attracts the same kind of athletes, I guess. So it's maybe not like this that strange that trail runners are doing a lot of skiing, or that skiers are doing a lot of trail running, because they like kind of attracts the same kind of people. But there is definitely runners who doesn't ski who do it really, really well, so it's not like the perfect recipe to become a great trail runner, I think. But I definitely think there's benefits to it, especially when it comes to like neuromuscular like training effects that you can get from the skis, and also that you don't have this impact all the time during the full year, that you get a period during the winter where you recover the muscles a little bit from that impact. At the same time, you can have a lot of volume. So, but at the same time, you're losing a little bit of this really specific type of running movement and running economy that is so great with running, that you really need to practice also. So that's been a interesting challenge, and that's something that I'm exploring this year to try to put in a little bit more running, and especially like speed sessions now during the winter, to see if I can.
To not lose skills like speed or
Yeah, exactly. Or for now, I feel like it's something I need to improve also, and something I don't want to wait for the spring to to try to improve, because then the race season starts and I have to recover from races, I have to prepare for races and so on. So my thought for this winter was to still do a lot of skiing and some like important sessions to get the elevation very easily, like on the snow, and to just hike up with the skis and go down and walk up again and get a lot of altitude, but then doing the running specific training on the flat surface and to work on my speed and my stride and do very specific workouts to improve this. Before, maybe the running has been more like if it was bad weather and we couldn't ski, or it was like more recovery runs, you know, just to move the legs a little bit. But now this winter, I felt like, okay, for the next season, I need to improve some stuff in my running stride and stuff like this. So I felt like I can't wait. I don't have the time really to wait for the spring, and I need to work on it during the winter. But
it's like an hybrid period.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I'm not doing like any huge mileage. So it's more like this balance of cross training. It's like, I would say in time, it's maybe 60 to 70% skiing at the moment, and the rest is running. I run between 70 and 100K a week with one interval session and one long run. It's not a huge amount, but it's a little bit to like feel like I'm still running and it's still a part of the training and not just a little bit on the side.
Yeah, it's quite logical. We say just before that you started running in mostly in competition with Sky Running, which are short and technical races.
Yeah,
we can say so. What brings you to do some longer races like Transvulcania in 2029?
It was out of curiosity. I think for me, the first Sky race I did in Le Mans, it was 24K. I think that was like super long for me. A 50K in Nordic skiing, which is the longest distances that we did, it takes around 2 hours, and the Le Mans Sky Race takes 3 hours. So it was like a pretty big step for me, and I was really, really tired afterwards. But then, like, I wanted to try like doing a little bit of longer distances and see what is happening to the body and to the mind. So I remember the first ultra I did was, or I call it ultra, I don't know, but it was longer than a marathon, was the Matterhorn Ultrax in Zermatt. I think it was 49K. And that was really, really long, and I was so destroyed after that. And then the year after, I did Trofeo Kima, which long in time, not that long in distance, but got to experience like how it is to run longer than six hours, I guess. And it was a fight, like both mentally and physically, and that I really, really appealed to me, I think. And Transvulcania became this race that I think. I was following Ida Nilsson, of course, who had won the race 3 years in a row, and it became like this huge race on my radar that I wanted to do one time, and decided to do it in 2019, and had a different experience of that, like experience both like, oh shit, this is my thing, but also like I never want to do this again. I remember I went off a little bit too hard. I was leading with like I was leading from the gun pretty much. Since I was only doing shorter races, I thought the pace was really, really slow.
Yeah,
so I just went off and like, oh, this is really, really easy.
This is easy.
And then I had like a gap of 8 minutes on Thibaut Gavier, I think, and then suddenly I got really bored after like 40K, and I just, oh, this sucks. I want to finish. Even though I was in the lead of one of the biggest ultra races in the world, I was like, oh, I just want to finish. This sucks. I'm never doing this again. So I lost a little bit of energy. And then And but then the race, my race devil come back when I saw that Thibaut and Dimitri was catching up behind me, and I was able to follow them for a few K, and we had a really, really good fight. And then I had a fall in the last downhill, and then I lost them, but still finished third.
So, yeah.
And it was a huge, huge race for me, and one of my best results ever, I think, and something I'm really proud of. And I think that, like, straight afterwards, it's like, oh, I'm never doing this again. But yeah, as for most people who are trying ultra,
the next day it's okay.
You change your mind after a few hours and like sign up for a new ultra not that long after. And it was a very cool experience. And then like my attention started to look a little bit more towards the 100K, and then maybe eventually the 100 miles UTMB or some race like this was something I was looking for in the further future.
What did you learn with this first attempt in the ultra with the Transvulcania? What are the lessons that you learned?
Oh, I learned not to waste too much energy in the beginning. To both physically and mentally, of course, I was like on this like race mode from the start, and that soon ran out of
Nordic skiing mode.
Exactly, I was like, oh, race for the position from the gun, and stay focused. And you have to be focused on ultra, but you also need to know when the mind can be a little bit less focused and just space out, and still doing the important stuff like nutrition and taking every step right. But you can't be on the edge all the time. So learning to save your energy, to drink well, to eat a lot, of course. And I also learned that I had potential in it, I think, that it was something I could enjoy, and something that I wanted to try more of. So it was not only like bad or like lessons that I wanted to improve to next year, but also I found strength as a runner or ultra runner during this race that I took with me.
And your first 100 kilometers was
BCC
2022. The first 100K, you definitely entered in another dimension with this race. Under 10 hours, victory, course record. First of all, why you wanted to win this race?
Oh, CCC was one of those races where it's like, it can't get much better than this. It was probably the best race in my whole career, like skiing and running. Like one of those days where it's like, I couldn't have done it much better in any way. And I think the CCC specifically had been on my radar for since 2019, when was the first time I went to Chamonix during UTMB week and looked at the races, and I thought that UCC looked like a really nice race, but not that different from what I've already done. It's shorter, it's fast, and still something I really wanted to do, of course. And I did it in 2021, and it was also one of my best races I've done. I think a small comeback for me there, and a very confident boost in my career, where I was third between John Albon and Robbie Simpson. So that was huge race for me. But when I have done that, I was immediately like, no, I want to do CCC, because I watched the CCC race in 2019. And thought that this was like a distance between the, like, it was still fast, but still this longer endurance ultra race,
yeah.
not like UTMB where you see like even though
yeah
the leaders they are out on a long hike,
mm-hmm.
it's not it's a hiking race
mm-hmm.
pretty much, and
mm-hmm.
that looked like a little bit too slow for me, but CCC still a fast running race in a way, but during a little bit longer time. So that was like a early goal for me from 2019, that one day I want to do CCC. And after I did OCC and felt like this was pretty much the best performance I could get of myself on this course, on this terrain for this day. And I felt like, no, it didn't feel so motivated for me to go back and do OCC again. So I was like, no, my next step is CCC and to do a try of 100K. Before that, I did the Templier in
Bio,
which was 80K. So that 80K. Was my longest, my longest race to date. And I felt like there, okay, it's just a little bit shorter than CCC, but a distance I could handle pretty well and that I liked. So, and also felt from that race what I needed to improve on and to work on towards CCC. So so the journey to CCC was one of the most focused and specific orientated like training I ever done for anything, and the result of it was much better than I could ever had imagined, I guess.
Speaking about the journey to CCC, what plan, what training do you schedule, do you put in the calendar to achieve your goal? What difference between preparation for CCC and for like a 50K, by example?
So there was a few key components, I would say. First thing, it was like the uphill speed and the uphill endurance that I worked on, that I have worked on for a lot of years. But for me, it was really nailing the uphill speed and to find a good rhythm with. It was my first race that I ever used poles.
Yeah.
So it was really fine tuning and finding the pace in an uphill that I felt like I could do really efficient. And
I think you know how to use it, no?
Yes, I know how to use poles. I think that I felt like pretty early on that I have a small advantage knowing how to use the poles and to also use them efficiently and to use my upper body right and to really take advantage of the poles. So that was something like I fine tuned and found my way of using them. And I've heard that, you can see me from pretty far distance when I'm walking with the poles because I walk like I'm Nordic skiing, some people say. But it's my way, and I use a lot of upper body in my hiking. And so I was fine-tuning that, finding the speed that I felt I could endure for a longer period of time. And for the other part, it was the downhill and flat running. And this was something that I realized first from during OCC, I think, when I raced Jonathan Albon for the first time that year and saw how insanely good he was on the downhill and on the flat. He's probably the best in the world on the downhill. And seeing him on some of the descents, like from running down to Tiant or down to Valorcin, where he just could put 2 minutes on me in such short time. And also I raced him in Maxi Race in Annecy in 2022, where I could get a 2 minute gap on him in the uphill, but then he just closed it immediately in the downhill. So I felt like, okay, I knew he was racing CCC, so I knew that, okay, if I'm going to beat him, I need to work on my downhills running. So that was something I also specifically worked on, to both get my legs used to run downhill for a long time and to run it in great speed. So put in like some speed sessions in downhill, and also practiced on technical and stuff like this. And it was also a bit of a equipment involvement, where before CCC I was testing the new Terrex shoes for the first time, and they also gave me great support to be able to push a little bit harder in the downhill. So when I arrived to CCC, I felt during that first downhill to Refuge Barton that, okay, I nailed the downhill practice here. I can follow the really easily, and I practice this well. And then it was the flat running, where I didn't do like much like speed work on the flat. I did some on the track and stuff, but I was more fine-tuning this speed and knowing, okay, on the flat, on the flatter part between La Folie and Champé, I should be able to keep around a 410, 420 pace, because this is a pace where I'm like very comfortable, very easy running, and I shouldn't run slower. I shouldn't run faster than this, because then I know that it will take a toll on my legs. So it was my, and John, I knew that John is a little bit better on this part, but as long as I can keep this pace, then he will have to push really hard to catch me on this part. And that will maybe be a little bit too tough in the end during 100K. And then, of course, it was like the third and maybe the most important part, which was like the overall preparation for CCC, that I lived in Chamonix from mid-May until UTMB week. And I knew every rock, every...
Six months.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Knew every part of the course, and especially from Champelac and to the finish in Chamonix, where I did multiple practice runs, where I knew like it takes exactly this time from this climb to the bottom, or to Valorcine to the finish line. So I always had, yeah, it became like my home, home trails in a way, and knew where every stream was, and stuff like this. And also, of course, the other preparations like nutrition, where I work very close with Morten and practice with what I'm eating and drinking and stuff like this. So it was a really nice,
Nice, exactly.
So like, of course, the race was great, and it was, but the I'm really happy with the journey towards the race also.
Do you think it was like an obsession, or do you think like it was a part of the job?
It was for me like it was a part of the job, and I really enjoyed it, and it was didn't compromise in anything, or felt like I was missing out on anything, more that I was doing something that I was really passionate about, and that's something I really wanted to do. So it was a great pleasure, and like staying in Chamonix for 6 months, it's can't complain.
Agreed. I agree. I don't know if it's possible for you to talk about that, but I know that I heard that you work with Joseph Mestrallet, which is who is a sport data scientist. And apparently you work with him to set the pace, to mark the times of your race in CCC, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So I met him in Chamonix during, I think I came or did a run, and he stumbled into me, and we chatted a little bit, and chatted a bit more during the summer. And he told me about his research and his work, and we talked about CCC, and to be honest, I think I went a little bit better than his predictions was. Of pacing and stuff. I think he predicted that if I did a really good race, I would be on eighth position. And that would be really good. So I think we needed to fine tune the algorithm a little bit after that. But we used it then for Transvulcania a few months later, and it worked really great there. And so it was really interesting and fun working with him, and I learned a lot of stuff with exactly like I say, with the pacing and when to use the pulse, where it's most effective, and stuff like this. So it was a great learning working with him for sure.
Great. What has this race changed for you in your career?
Oh, I think first of all, it was like after I finished, I was like, oh shit, now every race will feel so hard because CCC felt so good. I realized like, oh, it will be amazing if I have a race like this again.
It never happened again.
It hasn't happened. I had like Eiger was really, really good race, and I had some great experience racing since. But I realized like, okay, it will be hard to match this one. But I still have a lot of races to do, and I think a performance like this is still in my legs. I have many years to come. But that was like first thing like, oh, now next race will probably not feel as good, and Transvulcania didn't feel as good, but I did perform really well. And of course, after that, I became the one of the favorites for every race I turned up to, and so that's that for sure changed. But it's also a great like opportunity and like something I worked for, so I like enjoyed it. To say like it's a part of the game to become a favorite if you win one of the biggest races. So I try to take it as a opportunity and to embrace it and to take it as a strength. So of course you get a lot of other opportunities to race around the world and to and request and stuff like this, but I didn't let it go to my head in any way, and to stay focused on what to do in the future, and still enjoy the work and not live out of previous successes.
Can you say that it's definitely the most beautiful moment of your career until right now? Or is it?
Yes, yeah, it was. I would say that CCC and the Holmenkollen 50K. If I had to take like two races, those are the most special moments for me in my career. Absolutely.
So we're gonna talk about this year in 2023. You decided to compete in UTMB, the first 100 miles. Why you decided to compete this year, and what are your feelings before the race?
I decided to race UTMB pretty much after CCC. I felt like I said, now I've done this race and I can't really do it much better. So needed a new challenge, and UTMB felt like this next step for me. And of course, like my curiosity of doing a 100 miler and a proper long ultra race overnight, and doing it on a course like natural course around the Mont Blanc would make sense, and I wanted UTMB to be my first 100 miler. And so I decided that pretty early on, and I felt so excited like from that moment. I decided like, okay, now I'm gonna do UTMB, like finally something like I only heard crazy people doing a few years ago, and then suddenly I realized, okay, soon I'm also going to do UTMB. So that was huge, just knowing that one day I'm gonna stand on the start line. And it was always in the back of my mind throughout the training the whole winter. And so that winter I moved to Romsdalen, to the west coast of Norway where I live now, to train with Kilian and John and to change a little bit the environment, but also to to learn with them, learn from them, and to train a little bit more ski mountaineering. And we became a really good training group together here, and was more doing more longer training and some also night type of training to practice the pushing in during the night. So that was something I started to put into work early on, so that when I arrived to the UTMB or to that week, I was no stranger to competing throughout the night or to move there. It was like feeling normal. And we also have it pretty dark up here in general, so we're used to training with head torches. But yeah, then in general, I think what got through my head a little bit, like, yeah, CCT was such a great result, and I'd wanted to live up to that the year after, and to have a great performance at UTMB. And that was the only thing that got through my mind. Mm-hmm. And now looking back, it got a little bit too much. I was putting so much focus on only UTMB and not the races that came before. Like,
was it a different state of mind with the CCC?
Yes, for sure. In some ways, but then in some ways it was also quite similar, because CCC was still my main goal for 2022, but I still managed to enjoy and push and to embrace every race that came before that during that year. And I think I was in a little bit more happier place maybe during that whole process towards CCC. But then compared to to UTMB, then it was a little bit more this pressure on my shoulders to come to perform at this race, that I had a little bit more eyes on me before each race, and also I wanted to make sure I was in a good place towards UTMB. And always UTMB was so all the time in the back of my mind, so I wasn't enjoying those moments I had leading up to UTMB. I was still doing all the work that I wanted, and I think also looking back now, a little bit too much when it came to training. I was pushing myself a little bit too hard, felt like I needed to run a little bit more all the time, because I was now doing 100 miles and was never taking enough rest. When it also came to the racing, I did a world championship, had a not that great experience during that, had a little bit of an injury during the spring, so wasn't really prepared. But then Marathon du Mont Blanc went really, really well. But it was more like I felt like, okay, that was good. I am in a good process for UTMB. I wasn't happy of the result, which I should have been, because it was a great result. But it was more like this confirmation that I was on the right path towards UTMB. And then the same with Eiger. It was like maybe one of my best performances ever, but I wasn't happy for my performances during that time. I was more like, okay, it's just checking a box instead of evaluating the race or enjoying the great success I had in these races. And it was more like, it was just a part of the training towards UTMB. And so that also made it like, okay, when I came home from the races, I trained a little bit more because it was on the training. I did a little bit too much in July. We went for a recon loop around the Tour de Mont Blanc, me, Roof Croft, Dennis Jones, Martin, and some other from New Zealand. We did a loop to check the course, and it has some other training also, and because just too much, and my knees was just destroyed after that week. And yeah, that took a long time to recover from, and I felt like I was super sore in the knees, and they felt like I had done an ice bath, and was just stiff all the time. So I took it really easy, but didn't really listen to it. I think I was afraid of taking it too easy, and to and to rest. So I was on it running again pretty early on, and did the sessions I had planned to do and stuff like this. So the knee pain disappeared 2 weeks before UTMB. So I got a little bit more relaxed, and I felt great coming into UTMB week and good shape and in a happy place, and had a good feeling towards the race in general, and felt pretty relaxed. It was a lot of obligations and stuff, of course, during UTMB, like it always is, but I was looking forward to the race, and I felt at the time very recovered. And when the gun start, I was so excited, and it felt I so enjoyed the start of the race, and running through the night, and all of this, and I thought I had it, and I thought okay, I have solved like my I got through to a good point, and it felt great when I left Colmeyer in the third place together with Germain Grandjean. And then suddenly at Refuge Barton, my knees again just felt like they have got a big pile of ice put on them. They got so stiff, painful, and I couldn't run any one step further. So I pretty much hiked from Refuge Barton to Champelac. Didn't take many running steps at all. Like I was hiking pretty well uphill, but all the way down from
downhill.
From Col de Freya down to La Fully was the most painful kilometers in my life. Oh my god! And I stayed an hour in Champelac, just trying to recover the legs as possible, and tried to get out of the aid station, ran a few K, and then my knees just stumbled underneath my body, and that was it, I guess. And I was pretty bummed for a while after, because I it felt like an abrupt end of the season, and I was suddenly like, oh, I haven't done anything this season. I haven't lived up to the year previously, but I think, looking, maybe the thing I was mostly disappointed about was not finishing the loop at all. When I felt mentally and physically, with energy-wise, like I could have run the remaining 45K to the finish, but my legs couldn't. So it was... now I'm not afraid of the distance of 100 miles. I felt like, okay, this is something I definitely could do. But at this day, my legs were not as well prepared or recovered as they should have been. And it was a brutal lesson for sure. But I enjoyed the race a lot until it was not enjoyable. So I really want to go back.
So, what have you learned about this race, this preparation? What have you learned?
Some things in training. I will for this year try to stay a little bit more relaxed in the running, not do as much as I did this summer, do a little bit more cross training like I had done the previous year, like on the roller skis, on the bike. I think I ended up doing a little bit too much distance in running. So that's one thing training wise and then being more consistent and focused in the volume leading up to UTMB in June, July and August, and to be more careful during this time.
Yeah.
To not do too much.
Okay.
That was my big learning experience, and I also learned what I did good, I think, also during UTMB. Like, I felt like my nutrition worked really, really well from the start to the finish. The pacing for me then was also like not that bad. I think nobody could have beaten Jim Walmsley this day. Probably he was just untouchable.
Yeah.
And even at my best day, I would maybe not have beaten him. And I think I had one of maybe like shape wise one of my best days, maybe, and I could stay within contention for 100K. And so it's more this fine tuning the training or the general picture of like fatigue before the race and how to handle that to be able to be fresh for this type of race.
Okay. Is that your worst experience in trail running, this DNF in UTMB or no?
It was a tough one for sure. And disappointed of myself, of course. A lot of friends and fans and family who was there rooting for me and stuff like this. So it was disappointing not to be able to finish the loop for sure. And I had I was disappointed for sure, but I had a lot of rough races in my career. So because I raced so much in both Nordic skiing and in running. So, but I got over it pretty quickly. And when I was evaluating the season, I was pretty much taking the good parts from UTMB, what I experienced during the race, and then learning from the process of it, what I need to do better next time. I didn't look so much about what I need to do better during the race of UTMB. I felt like I had it pretty much nailed how I wanted it and the experience I wanted.
It's quite positive.
Positive experience overall.
So
it was more like, okay, what do I need to do different in the training and the preparations for it when I was looking back at the season? And then also looked back at the other races a little bit more in detail, like the Eiger and the Marathon de Mont Blanc, and felt like, okay, it was good races, it was great performances, and I can still race fast. So I'm positive, and I'm really motivated to give it a new try and to race fast.
Great. What makes this race particular UTMB 100 miles so difficult to deal with? Is it pressure? Is it competitiveness or format in itself?
It's I guess you would say it's both. It's or all parts. It's a race that is firstly like a huge privilege to just be on the starting line of it, so you feel that pressure for sure. Like it's thousands of people who just try to get in the lottery for this race, so the fact that you get a spot is just like you want to make it right, and you want to show that you have earned it in a way and not take it for granted. So it's that pressure, and you know there is so many people who would love to be in your shoes and to also be able to be one of the favorites for the race. That was also like being ranked number two after Jim Walmsley for UTMB. It's not every day you're that.
Yeah.
So I saw it as a huge privilege and a rare opportunity, and so that made it for one really, really special. And then it's the history of the race, who has won before, and the ones who will probably win in the years to come, and all of this. And then it's, of course, the location and the history of Mont Blanc, and Chamonix itself is the central of mountaineering in Europe, and it's the tallest mountain in the Alps, and you're doing a loop around it that is very natural and makes sense in a way. So it has like everything to be a race that deserves high value and repetition and competition and all of this. So first of all, the race is fantastic, and the fact that so many wants to win it also makes it special, and all the excitement and the hype before it makes it even more difficult. Of course, it's probably like lifts a lot of makes a lot of shoulders a little bit more tight during the race, prior to the race, and during the first kilometers.
Will you go back to Utembe next year in 2024? No? Yes?
That's my plan. I still haven't got an official entry to UTMB. I am signed up for CCC because I had a spot from CCC to CCC. I was supposed to race Kodiak 100 in the United States during the fall, but I had a fracture in my collarbone after a bike crash in September, so I couldn't go.
Okay.
So I will go to Canyons Endurance Race by UTMB in late April to get my entrance for UTMB. So that's my plan. It's race there.
Great.
Yes,
can't wait to see that. I want to talk about the quick development of our sport this last 2, 3, 4 years, just after the pandemic and etc. Can you tell your point of view about this development, the presence of brands, etc.?
Yeah, it's been really interesting to been following it and to been a part of it in some ways also. So when I came into the sport, and what I was following was mostly skyrunning, because that's what was, I guess, was big then in 2016, 17. In 18, that was Killian was racing, and so many other who was great in trail running, and so that's what I was starting to follow at least, and I think in general it was big interest in those kind of races, and it's then shifted to to other formats and to other series and races in 2018 and 19, where, for instance, the Golden Trail series came into the picture. So then suddenly the short format races, like between 20K to marathon, then became more
attractive.
Exactly. Then more athletes was more looking at these races and series. Some of the races was still in the skyrunning series, like, and have been part of the skyrunning series previously. So all the races like Sagama, Dolomites, Glencore, like, or Sky, the one in Scotland, and many of these races that is in Golden Trail series have been sky races before, even Marathon du Mont Blanc, I think, also. So that was like a little bit the start, and it was more focused on the technical, and then it's been more tailored towards the more trail running and more performance, like a little bit more, broader audience friendly. Sky running is very niche. It's very technical, and you go to high altitude, you go to very technical races, and it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
So that the focus for shorter races is now a little bit less technical, but faster, then makes it more attractive for more runners that is fast and that is good from all over the world that doesn't have these technical trails, I think is a pretty good and development of this niche of the sport. And at the time, I wasn't that following the Ultra series that much, so I can't really say like what was big and what was not, but obviously UTMB and Western States was the big ones, and the Grand Raid and Miut, of course, and Transvulcania in more the 100k sub ultra categories, and then I guess like the UTMB series and that has taken over a lot of the ultra scene, and the ultra scene has taken a very big spot in the highlights, of course, and it's also very interesting to see how more brands is coming into the sport, and more big brands, of course, like
Nike,
like North Face, Terex, now Asics, you name it. It's not only Salomon anymore, and so that is really, really interesting, and it's great for the sport and for us athletes. I think that the sport has got more attention and a bigger reputation amongst the big outdoor brands.
And what are your thoughts about some people talk about hegemony of UTMB? Do you think that it's important to have some series in parallel of UTMB to have a counterpower?
In my point of view, the UTMB is, there's of course things that need to be better and that we need to improve, and we are in a great time where I think it's still possibilities to make changes and to make improvements both for elite athletes as well as amateurs and runners further down in the fields. And I'm not saying that I'm not saying that UTMB is perfect. Definitely not. There is still a lot to be done. But I think, in my point of view, that for the sport and for the development of new athletes or like younger athletes, and for the interests that UTMB has done something special, and it also comes to what I said before, the natural location of the race in Chamonix, and the course and the history and the culture around Mont Blanc and Chamonix. It's like a race that I think can't be replicated or done anywhere else, just like Tour de France can't be what it is in another.
It is what it is. It's unique.
It is what it is, exactly. and it's huge like this. So what we can do is like help us as elite athletes is to help improve it and to make it better. And I am positive that we are in a place where we can improve it. And also I'm immensely proud and impressed by the community in trail running that we are speaking up, that there are athletes who is active in making changes compared to in Nordic skiing or other sports where you're just standing on your heels and waiting. Yeah, just waiting for what the sports are taking, and we are. But it's a very active community that wants to make the best for the sport. And so then for me, it's great that there is just this one race, this one series that has a lot of money, that has a lot of attention, that also the best of the best athletes want to go to, where a race that if you win or if you're a podium or if you're top 10 can make a huge change in your career. And that's a great opportunity that we have. And if we had this in a location like Chamonix, where it's like makes sense to have it also, it's just fantastic. And I'm also say like there's so many grassroots races out there in the world that you can do anyway. So I think it's great that we have this race that is just bonkers, a little bit that is just crazy. So just embrace that. And I still love to do short or like local races where you just sign up for 100 or no, I mean, like 15 euros and you run and you get a t-shirt and some water when you finish. And there is no photographer or nothing. It's great that there is races like this. And I think we as elite athletes also need to do this races as well, and to stay connected to the communities as well. Exactly. And this is the root of the sport as well. But I think it should be allowed also to have this crazy week where we feel like a professional sport also.
And do you think, to finish about that, do you think that it's possible that one day another race will be the most competitive race in the world, or UTMB is definitely the place to be, the climax?
I don't know. It's very interesting. When it comes to 100 miles and 100K, I do think so. I think it's hard to find a location and atmosphere that is that iconic as UTMB. But I think for UCC and for this shorter distance format, it's more varied and it's more seasonal based, maybe, that at the moment is Sierre-Sénal, that it's the biggest and the most competitive. It would be interesting to see if other races can be and compete in this space also. But I'm also open to like if there is opportunities for a challenger for the longer distance format races also, to that can give great entertainment and live stream and prize money and opportunities. Not, I think it's important to also say that trail running is not only for the elites, it's also for the big masses. And it's not fun for us as elites to stand alone on the start line. Then there's only like hundreds of us. It's much cooler to be on a start line with thousands, or of course. So it needs to be a course and a location that a lot of people can go to. So in that regard, Chamonix also makes sense. Also, but perhaps there's a race that comes up in the future that also has great location, great organization, and a great communication that makes the sport show what it is. So it's interesting times for sure.
We are at the crossroad today.
Yes.
To finish this episode by a little bit of fun, it was great, but I want to make a little bit of fun. I made an episode recently with Robin Schmidt, which is behind Les Genoux d'Angélif. Do you know it? He is really obsessed about sprayed ankle, twisted yes. ankle. And he say in this episode that in CCC 2022, he said that you made a masterpiece, like a piece of art of sprained ankle. Can you say a little bit about that? And apparently you can't remember where and when this sprained ankle happened.
No, so for those who don't know, there's this picture of my ankle in a 90 degree angle from the CCC race.
Yeah.
And I don't remember it.
How it's possible?
It's pretty. I remember spraining my ankle sometime before Valorcine, but that was the right ankle.
You're really flexible.
I think so. I am, or like, I think I like tore my ligaments so many times that maybe they just can't be strained anymore. So it was pretty funny that that was the thing that, of course, my race and the time I did it was like got some attention, but I think the thing that really stood out from the race was my strained ankle, which was a little bit ironic, I guess. And
but don't worry, we remember too the time that you made for the race.
I know that Robin likes to put that picture up on only gift.
You confirm that you can't remember that, so it's pretty impressive. Okay, Peter, it was great. If you want, you can tell us special things or a message or anything you want to close the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great talking to you. I will spend some time in Chamonix from 20th of May until sometime in July, and I will try to try for the record up and down Mont Blanc. Mm-hmm. So if anyone is in the area at the time, please come and say hello, or to if you want to go for a run or anything, just reach out. But otherwise, I mean, fun to chat with you.
Thank you very much. Where can we follow you on the socials?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram, Petter Engdahl, and Strava. I think if you want to see how I train, I pretty much upload everything there. So yeah, search for me on Strava. Otherwise, that's where you can find me.
It was a great moment. It was such an honor to have you on the podcast. So thank you very much, Peter. And a great year for you, great UTMB for you if it's possible. And thank you again.
Merci.
Merci beaucoup.